current density on the semiconductor burns it up. That's the first mode of failure. It's not arc over. Almost all the connectors we use of the type N series, you can put 20 kilowatts through them in peak pulses, and it doesn't arc over, even with a polonium source nearby. So the power failure mode is a current density of the semiconductor. UHF's got a nice peak semiconductor, and so the biggest thing you can fault the UHF connector for is it's got lousy weatherproofing. You've got to supply some serious weatherproofing on the outside, otherwise water is going to get into your cable. That's a bunch of opinions on that connector. The K2LYY for any other comments, K2LYW.
KC2QAQ.
Glenn Rick.
WB2EAB still waiting with a coax question.
Okay, we'll get to you. Go ahead, Joe, for a final.
That particular website was the only website that I found that happened to carry until I did some experimenting, until I found the number of filters. I was also looking for a filter that cut off at 700 and 700 megahertz, and originally I found one only at 750 made by Channel Plus, and then I found that one that they happen to carry, but it's called TrueSpec, that's made by Macon, Pico/Macon. You said about putting these filters or any kind of filter ahead of an amplifier, you're increasing the noise figure, but isn't it worth it if you can tend to be able to reject above band stuff that you don't want getting into your amplifier, overloading it?
Yeah, it's a mixed blessing there. When you put a band pass, band stop, low pass, high pass, whatever, you put a filter in front of a preamplifier. The insertion loss at your frequency of interest, the insertion loss of the filter, adds directly to the noise figure. If your filter has got 1 dB of insertion loss at your frequency, which adds 1 dB of noise figure, and your 3.5 dB noise figure preamp goes to 4.5 dB, that's not a big hit. That may be very worthwhile if the filter is now rejecting strong stuff nearby that gives you grief. If and only if the strong stuff nearby is strong enough to give you grief at the power level the preamp is operating at. If downrange the rest of your receiver becomes overloaded by strong signals, then put that filter after the preamplifier. Now you're not taking the noise figure hit, but you're protecting the rest of the system. But there's a catch. You put a filter after the preamplifier. If the preamplifier is not unconditionally stable, there's a slim chance the preamplifier goes into oscillation. And maybe you put in a 1 dB pad after the preamplifier to correct for that before the filter. So there's an ideal filter. There's an ideal location for the filter. You can change the impact. You have to study where is the dynamic range limitation of your system. Where's the chain is no stronger than the weakest link. And usually the third stage downrange in the receiver is the first thing that saturates when you put in strong signals. So your preamplification up front and your filtering before that third stage can give you the best of all worlds, unless you live right next door to channel 21 and they're ramming 24 kilowatts down your throat. W2RYY, K2RIW.
Okay, well, I'm probably going to stick with the filter I'm going to buy with the thing because I have something lined up where I want to put a certain system together. I want to be able to try to protect it because I have noticed that with the amplifier I'm currently using on a particular antenna on the roof, which is not a TV antenna, which is a monitor antenna, but just for test purposes, that I have had people with cellular phones or these next phones where we get into the thing and I'd actually cut my DTV picture out of them occasionally because I can listen to them on the R7000 at the same time. And it's transferring in the 825 to 835 megahertz bands. I definitely know it's stuff with handheld devices near me that are actually upsetting my amplifier. That's why I was asking about putting a cutoff filter ahead of the amplifier to stop it from getting overloaded or blocked or whatever the case may be that's doing to me.
Yeah. A good preamplifier can take plus 10 dBm at the output before it goes into 1 dB of compression. And if it's got, let me pick a number, 10 dB of gain, then that equates to a 0 dBm input. If you keep all the inputs peak envelope power of all the inputs below 0 dBm, and the preamplifier doesn't do any limiting per se, and maybe you can do the filtering in the output without hurting the noise figure. But 1 dB of hurt or half a dB of hurt of noise figure by putting the filter in front of the preamplifier may be a very good way of doing things. Glenn, you had a comment on all this, KCQQIQ, KQRIW.
Yeah, actually the question I had was about the connectors earlier. You were mentioning a 9 dB suckout on a connector. And I don't know, I'd like to know a little bit more about that because I've measured everything from VHF connectors, F connectors, SMA, type Ns, all kinds of connectors on cables into dummy loads and then did a sweep with network analyzers. And usually the loss that I'll measure, the insertion loss on the cable, is usually pretty close to the loss of the cable over the length and over frequency. And as you increase the frequency, you see the loss go up a little bit. It bumps up. But you talked about a 9 dB suck out someplace in the coax. That I've never seen in terms of insertion loss. That 9 dB that you were talking about, is that, what is that? And I guess just as a secondary note, I mean, in front of a preamplifier, I think before you were talking about using notch filters, you know, putting a little T in line with a piece of coax, cut it to the right wavelength, and boom, you notch out that frequency very nicely. But back over to you, Dick, about the about this connector and this 9 dB loss, which is kind of a mystery to me, KC2QIQ.
Yeah, first of all, good connectors have insertion losses of 0.03 dB, you know, something damn small. Unless you've put a whole bunch of carbon granules inside that connector, you can't make a connector have insertion loss. If it passes your ohmmeter test, it's not going to have any loss. It just doesn't have a mechanism for doing that. And you get 9 decibels of suck out. That's what those curves that Joe mailed me are showing. And yes, I'm highly alarmed by that. If you had a ripple of a half a dB in a connector at 18 gigahertz, I'd say, yeah, that's okay. 9 dB of suck out at a VHF, UHF frequency is huge. Something funny is going on there. Either Joe or I or both of us are going to mail you a copy of that data and see if you can interpret it. The first time I looked at it, I said, what in the world is going on here? These are huge numbers. Did they make a decimal point error? And so what looks like 9 decibels of error is 0.9, but no. There's a little sign there pointing to that bump saying 9 decibels. So I have to mail you a copy of that and see if we can interpret it. There's something funny going on. He's still on his constitutional. Ed, we got to catch him in a hurry. B2EAV, K2RIW, go ahead, Ed.
Jake, I've been home 45 minutes. As far as that 9 dB suck out, I think you really should look at the test setup. There's no limit to the silly things people can do. You might actually have to see it. All right, I have two simple questions. Question number one, Dick. You have extolled the virtues of using 3/4-inch cable TV aluminum shield hardline. You say you've used it with very good results. How do you terminate the stuff?
I must have close to 1,000 feet of that stuff in service on my QTH now. You're listening to my signal through one of those. Putting a connector on the end of the hardline, 3/4-inch hardline, is an art form. I own the coring tool that precisely whittles away just the right amount of foam. Then I install a stinger connector. What is a stinger connector? The stockyard where you got the cable. Also usually is throwing away a whole lot of used connectors. The stinger connector goes on the end of the cable. That in turn screws into the box where the preamplifier goes on top of the utility pole for your cable TV system. The stinger connector, it's made to properly mate to the end of that cable, give you a good weather seal, a good mechanical junction. It's got a nice internal sleeve. It does a collet mechanism grabbing with teeth onto that cable. It really grabs onto that cable with an O-ring and whatever. The stinger connector, where it screws into the box, it's got a 5/8 24 thread on this male connector. Well, it's got a male center pin, but it's got a female outer thread. And you take the right brand name of UG21 type N connector, and it will screw onto the end of the stinger connector. You cut off that center connector, center contact of the stinger connector to the right length, solder on your center pin of your type N connector. Now you've got a type N connector stacked on top of the stinger connector that's stacked on top of the cable. It's a kludgy looking mechanism, but it works. It's got a lot of airspace inside. It's got 70 ohm impedance inside. So I don't recommend you do it at 1296. I've done it at 432. It's moderately good. At 2 meters, it's fantastic. So that's one way of getting a connector on there. Various other guys have found ways of going to a plumbing supply house and getting various fittings with hose clamps and whatever and slotting the cable. They found other ways of getting either a UHF or a type N connector on the end of the hard line. It is a little bit of a kludgy operation. Over to you, Ed.
Well, that leaves it out for me because it's got to be installed by, you remember Lurch from the Adams family? I don't think he can handle that. Okay, let's go to part two. Times Microwave LMR 400 is currently very popular. A friend of mine suggested Belden 7810 or RF 400, saying unlike the Times Microwave stuff, it uses, can be soldered to a standard PL259. Do you have any knowledge or comments about this before I go that way?
Don't give up on hardline. I use the Singer connector and the Type-N connector and the Kluge arrangement because I'm cheap. I'm cheaper than you at times. If I go to the right manufacturer, I believe, at least there used to be, a manufacturer that makes a real weatherproof Type-N or UHF connector intended, designed to mate on the end of 3/4-inch hardline. And by the way, 3/4-inch hardline used to be the most popular. I think 7/8-inch and 1/4-inch are now the most popular. So wherever you get your hardline from, which is the ruggedest stuff in the world, really good cable, as long as you can get a good connector on the end of it, and you're willing to spend some money, somebody's going to, when you do enough of a web search, you're going to find somebody who builds the connector in your style of connector that will mechanically mate to the end of that cable. So give that some thought. Now, LMR also makes some very nice cable. And soldering, I don't know about. I've seen, there is some LMR on my tower right now, and there's a crimp connector arrangement made for LMR that people have installed that works very well. You're going to install that connector. Lurch is not going to do that. So you're either going to buy your cable with a connector installed, or you're going to do the cable installation, either the connector installation. Then you're going to put a protector on the end of that cable and, you know, a great big plug, a Teflon or whatever, no, that's a polyethylene red plug on the end of the cable so that it's being protected while he's dragging it across the concrete to install it in your location. And then when it's in location, you give him specific instructions as to how to remove the red plug and then plug it into your antenna. That's part of my recommendation to you, Ed. Go ahead.
KC2QIQ.
Hang on one sec, QIQ. This is not a technical question. Lurch will be doing the installation. If I try to do the installation that you're requesting, it is your moral obligation to find a new president of the Grumman Amateur Radio Club after they fire me for doing it. QSL?
Oh, I hear you loud and clear. Glenn, go ahead.
Just a quick thing for Ed. On the LMR 400s, there's the standard LMR 400, and then there's an Ultraplex. A PL259 will fit a lot better, not ideal, but a lot better on the Ultraplex. On the standard LMR 400 with the solid conductor center, a Dremel tool, you can get it on there, but it's not going to fit well. But just about all of the Type-N connectors will fit really well on either end of either one of the LMR 400s, and you might want to use an adapter. But using Type-N on either end is definitely the simpler way to go. But if you have to use PL259 on LMR 400, I would suggest the Ultraplex, KC2QIQ.
Good point. Thank you.
Okay. Have we almost finished the subject?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. Now, John's been standing by. I hope he's still with us. KB2, Bravo Delta, I think it is. John, go ahead with your report if you're still with us.
Hey, good evening, Dick. Thanks. I was on a little bit earlier with you getting you to the command line in Linux so you can do your ping and traceroute commands. I actually got up at 3 o'clock in the morning last week and monitored the DTV test that took place. For a receiver, I used my ProBrand or Digital Stream Model 3150 Plus receiver. This receiver has a signal-to-noise ratio indicating S-meter display on it. So I used this device to measure the signal-to-noise ratio that I was getting for both channel 7 and 13. Prior to the switchover, when channel 7 WABC was still on UHF channel 45, I was getting between 29.7 and 30.7 dB signal-to-noise ratio. After the switchover, when they went to VHF channel 7, I was getting a 31 dB signal-to-noise ratio, so very close matching between those two. I'm not at the present time getting WNET on channel 61, since they did the antenna changes. And even before that, it was right on the borderline of my threshold. But when they went to HF channel 13. I was getting, which is not too bad. The antennas that were used in this case for VHF, a chimney mount channel master antenna, which is a an old model 3613. Log periodic antenna with the 7 active elements and 1 tri-band director. UHF antenna is a stack of 4 bow ties in front of a screen, and that's in the attic, so that's about 10 feet below the VHF antenna. The VHF antenna is up at 30 feet. I am 42 and a half miles south of Empire, and I have almost the line of sight path to Empire. I have some terrain that's about 100 feet. About 4 miles, 100 feet above mean sea level, about 4 miles to the north of me, so that creates a little bit of a blockage, but those are the signal levels I'm getting through that test. So K2RW and a TechNet from KD2BD.
Is it Kilo Delta 2, Bravo Delta? I think I bet your call letters wrong, John.
Yes, it's Kilo Delta 2, Bravo Delta, over.
Okay, interesting information. You did all of that measurement, I guess, from your home QTH in Seagirt, New Jersey. Or did you do some of that remotely, John? Go ahead.
No, it was all done from my home QTH. Most channels that I get on DTV are averaging around in the upper 20 signal-to-noise ratio. And earlier discussing the threshold of reception, I always thought the threshold was 15.4 dB, and I think there's some people who argue that it's 15.5 dB. Well, I can tell you with this particular receiver, anything below about 15.4 dB, the signal, the picture either freezes or I don't get anything. So I think that is a threshold beyond, you know, the threshold you want to be above. So I'm getting signals at, you know, 42 miles south of Empire that are about 15 dB above that threshold. A couple of other things. Some of the questions tonight and in previous weeks dealt with the sensitivity of various receivers, what kind of signal levels are required. I think some of that information can be found on articles that are on the TVtechnology.com website. TV Technology is a industry magazine for television engineers, and one of the columnists is Doug Lung, who happens to be a ham. He does the RF column for that particular magazine, and a lot of his articles are on the TVtechnology.com website. Doug is a vice president of engineering for NBC and Telemundo network of stations, so he has charts and information about thresholds and about VHF low versus VHF high, and all the different testing that he's done, different measurements that he's done. Also in recent weeks, there's been some questions about the different sub-channels that broadcasters are using, the different resolutions that are used on these sub-channels. There is a website called rabbitears.info, which has some technical information on pretty much any television station around, I believe in the whole United States, and they'll tell you what's on what sub-channel and what the bit rate is and all that kind of stuff, and what the status of the station is, what the post-February 17th final channel is going to be, all that kind of stuff. K2RAW and the TechNet from KD2BD.
Very fine, John. Lots of good information there. John, you sound like the kind of guy who hasn't done it yet, or maybe you already have. I think you're eventually going to set up a tower and start doing digital television DXing. Have you given that some thought? It sounds to me like you might also be moving in that direction, John. Go ahead.
Yeah, that would be a neat thing to do. I can tell you this. The receiver that I have, I've had for about 2.5 years. And I guess it was this past summer. You know, every once in a while, during a band opening, I'll put the receiver in rescan mode, and it will pick up and identify new channels that are coming in and add them to its list of list of channels that it's received, so it can map them, and I can select them with the remote control. Well, I guess it was last summer. I just happened to go through every single channel and count every single channel that I've received so far, and I counted 60 channels the furthest being WGBH and I think it's WCVB, both in Boston. They come in fairly regularly during the summertime. QQREW. Oh, and the TechNet. But one other comment about something that Joe brought up, and I'll pass it back to you first.
6-0 channels. Now, does your particular digital demodulator remember any channel it has ever seen? Or if today on a winter day I do a scan and there's only 10 channels there, then it only stores the 10 and it erases the other 50. Give me a couple words on that one. Back to you, John.
It can do either of those two scenarios. There's a rescan and I forgot what the other mode is. The other mode actually erases everything and starts from scratch. I do the overlay method, the rescan method, which keeps everything that it's received and everything that it knows and overlays the new information. For example, during last week's test, it already knew that WABC television was on channel 45. Well, after they switched to channel 7, I did a rescan, and it found channel 7 on channel 7, and it updated its little map so that when I flip through the channels now with the remote, I have two WABC HDs, I have two WABC pluses, and whatever the third subchannel is, I have them interleaved with one another. WGBH in Boston is on channel 2, and WCBS television is also channel 2, and so I have a couple of channel 2s, and they're different RF signals, but they're different channel mappings. I also have a Zenith, one of these little converter boxes, the Zenith DTT901s. That does something similar, but it's not quite the same. Going back to 5 months ago or 3 months ago, our local or our statewide PBS network, New Jersey network, would actually change the content of their digital signals. They would, by day, have, I think, two or three standard definition streams, and then at 8 o'clock, between 8 p.m. and midnight, they would drop one of those standard definition streams and introduce a high definition channel. I think the Zenith converter would have a problem with that, because every time you rescan, it's not going to pick up, I don't think it's going to pick up the new, the change in format, but with the digital stream 3150 plus, it had enough smarts not to erase anything that it knew and to actually go through channels that it already had picked up and look for anything that was new and add that to its memory list. KQRAW and the TechNet from KD2BD.
Boy, that 3150 sounds like a nice machine. Digital stream, you called it, and also pro some other word. I can't read my own writing. Pro something. Out of curiosity, how many dollars, and do you think that one is still available?
Yeah, Pro Brand. I got it about 2.5 years ago. I'm not sure if it's still available. I think a lot of the manufacturers, like Digital Stream, have gone into the TV converter business and have kind of not done much with the desktop boxes. Incidentally, another neat experiment I've done with this is I've taken the composite video out from this particular receiver, and I put a scope on it. I did some measurements on the voltage amplitudes and sync and things like that. And it has an output, which is RGB, with sync intermixed on the green. And so what I did is I built together some fairly simple electronics to strip away the sync, separate the horizontal and vertical sync pulses, take the sync pulse away from the green signal, and I applied this to a computer monitor and got high-definition television on a computer monitor. KQRAW and the TechNet from KD2BD.
Very fine, John. Hey, John, that's appropriate for a technical topics article for QST or QEX magazine, the fact that you got digital high-definition television by your method on your laptop or your desktop computer. That sounds like a beauty. I wonder if Eric is still with us. Eric, KE2EJ, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. And actually, one of my high-def sets is a computer monitor. So happens that the receiver has a VGA connector on it.
Now, when John was telling us about 15 so dB of signal to noise ratio, indicated on his screen from his digital down converter, that it's RSSI, it's receiver signal strength, semi-seconds. That's its receiver signal strength indicator. Would I be correct in assuming that that number, a relative number that his converter printed out, is quite different from the 27 or 25 dB of carrier-to-noise ratio that's really required for good demodulation that you and I were talking? I think we have a little bit of a problem of the definition of signal-to-noise ratio, carrier-to-noise ratio, what he prints out, what's really there. You might want to give us a couple of words on that one, Eric, if you happen to know. KE2EJ, KQLIW.
No, I've listened to him before. It's at the low end, it's reading ADC, but when it gets up to the high end, it's doing an interpolation of error rate. And the numbers that he was quoting before are exactly right for the stations that he's receiving. He can't pick up 61 for beams because there's very little energy heading out his way. But the 30s, the highest number he should ever see is around 36. Now, as I told you, the third generation receivers start to disappear around 22, 21. 27 is the number where there's zero error, okay? The FCC requires that you transmit that number to start with, right? Because you can make your transmitter do worse than that, so that leaves you with no overhead trying to get to another receiver. I haven't measured the fifth generation receivers, but now I've heard that he can get like minus 17, 18, so I have this thing locked up, which is pretty good. But remember, the magic number of 27 is the same thing as the 45 for a snow-free picture and analog. That's the equivalent, not where's the receiver sensitivity. KQRWK, here we go.
Yeah, and he's not getting 61 because 61 is super high in frequency, not very much in power, not much power directed in his direction. My guess is, as the engineer, the broadcast engineer from Channel 13, you were a little bit unhappy that the Friendly Candy Company handed you Channel 61, which in multiple ways is going to disappear. I think digital television is not going to go above Channel 51 or 52, your so-called core frequencies. So they gave you guys a frequency out of core, or out of the future core. Sounds to me like you had grounds for a protest there. Over to you, Eric.
W2BZ.
BZ recognized. We'll get to you right after Eric. Go ahead, Eric.
All right. Let me just warn you that there's politics involved in this. Being out of core was never an issue. Okay. Spending the money because there was somebody on the board that was dead set against spending any money on digital television. It's no longer on the board is the reason why people can't pick us up. Not because of just being out of court. Yeah, it's just a lousy part of the band, but hey, they're Channel 67. They got it worse than we do. But it's really not that bad if you got some power behind you. But because after the politics went away and they needed a stopgap method to satisfy the FCC that they were transmitting, a small, quick, and dirty transmitter was picked up. And then it was put into this huge master antenna system, which is kind of lossy. Plus the fact it's many hundreds of feet away before you get to the antenna. So that's the story behind that. Did I just get lost? I guess so. Back to you, Dick.
Don't worry, Eric. You gave us some good information. Rich, W2BZ, we talked to him earlier. He's got an interesting problem, and that is he has to dwell way down 400 feet above sea level at the 30th floor of a building in Manhattan, and he wants to put up a good antenna on HF frequencies. The poor guy is down in the cellar, 400 feet above the deck. I'm ribbing him a little bit here. Sorry to keep you waiting, Rich. W2BZ, K2LIW.
Yeah, K2LIW, W2BZ. Do you hear me okay?
Dick, go ahead. A little bit noisy, but you sound good. Go ahead.
Excuse me. Maybe that's the frog in my voice. I actually have a question that pertains to digital TV and also one about
that artificial ground we were talking about earlier today. On a digital TV about a year ago, I just bought a little antenna, digital, well, I don't know if it's digital antenna, a little antenna, and hooked it up to my digital tuner in my LCD TV, and all I could get were two or three religious stations. Now, I'm wondering, since I'm my apartment is absolutely looking the other way, in other words, from the Empire State Building, uptown. Let me drop it a second. I'm just wondering if, when everybody switches over, is the transmission pattern going to be any different? In other words, will I not be able to get the stations, all the stations that I would have been able to get if I was facing, if my windows were facing the Empire State Building, as opposed to the total opposite, 180 degrees away from it, right?
Where exactly are you?
Yeah, he's above, he's in uptown, and he's got a window that faces to the north and to the east. Go ahead, Eric.
And what are you using for a receiver?
I'm using a ViewSonic. I guess it's 40. I forget already. 40-inch, 48-inch LCD TV.
Okay. I don't know that particular model. They did a couple of years ago make them with analog only tuners. That's one thing. They do make them where there's actually two F connectors, one for NTSC and one for DTV. Because when you set a couple of religious stations, they're generally analog.
I know, these are definitely digital, and it does have a digital tuner in it, because I was getting, like, I forget what channel it was now, let's say channel 50, 1, and 2, so they were definitely digital. And I was wondering why, you know, with all the commercial stations out there, it was only religious stations, two or three religious stations, in Manhattan or facing, I was facing to the north and east. I'm on 68th Street, on the east side, on the 30th floor of the building. And I was wondering, why are these guys already transmitting digitally and not the big boys? And will this, will I be able to get ABC and NET and all that if I'm facing totally away, 180 degrees away from the Empire State Building, or looking south down Manhattan? Rich, what are you using for an antenna?
Okay, the religious station, whether it's WMUC or the Korean?
As I say, this was about a year ago, maybe 9 months ago, and I don't remember. There were actually two of them, two religious stations that were transmitting digitally. And what am I using for an antenna right now? What was I using then?
Either answer. Well, what were you using for an antenna then, and what do you intend to use now?
I was using, it was actually sold by True Value. I forget the name of it. It was some kind of small Yagi configuration for the digital, for digital transmissions, or reset digital transmissions. I threw it out. It was, first of all, too big for the apartment. I guess I should have kept it. Right now I haven't tried it again since a year ago, since all there were those two religious stations, but I do want to try things again after the switchover. But I'm just wondering, is anything going to improve pattern-wise from the transmitter, or am I going to be in the same situation I was before the switchover?
Is there a master antenna system in your building, or will you be aiming a antenna out of your great big picture window that goes to the north and to the east? Over to you, Rich.
There used to be a master antenna system in this building when they were actually using an antenna on the roof before cable, but that's gone away. I think I may be able to dig into one of the walls and find some coax. I know there's no antenna now on the roof anymore, so I
can't really answer that in terms of a mass, just a regular master antenna system. I don't know how they're doing it cable-wise, but I don't know. Maybe I could try to tie into some coax behind the plate that used to be used.
Go ahead. Here's what I would recommend.
Yeah, I don't think that coax is going to do any good. And one further piece of information for you, Eric, is that he's on the 30th floor of a 33-floor building. He used to have access to the roof. For liability reasons now, he has zero access to the roof. So he's either going to hang something out his window or look to the north or the east with some kind of an antenna in the apartment. I'm having trouble believing that the coax cable in the wall that's not connected to an active antenna system anymore, I'm having trouble believing that's going to do him any good. You got it, Eric.
You know, what you ought to do is get yourself a coupon. That's how bad it is. And go find a good spot. You should have no trouble getting all, especially you're north. You're not that far away. I mean, I've got guys in the basement that are picking it up. The pattern is 360 degrees, okay? There's no question about that. Get yourself a latest generation receiver and find yourself a good spot, you know. And once you figure that out, then put your rabbit ears there and hook it up to your big TV set. But these 60 or 70 hour tuners, if you get a, if you had gotten a coupon card, thank you, would cost you about $14, $15. So it's worth doing it for the experiment. All the big stations have been broadcasting for on the order of 5-6 years now. So it's not anything new. And there's one religious station, WMBC. They're Korean and a couple of different languages. And then there's one more which is out to the east of you. But if you can see, you should be able to pick up channel 21 with no problem, especially at that height. And the pair of that is should really do it for you. It may be that you're set as an older generation of tuner in it and have a little bit of a hard time. That's why I say go out and get one of those new boxes and try it.
I hear there are no more coupons.
Yeah, but Obama's going to do something about that, he says. If he got himself a high-gain Yagi or a dish antenna and aimed it out his north and east facing great big picture window at the 30th floor, and if he aimed it up a carefully chosen building to the north and to the east of him and got the reflection off the building, is there a slim chance he'd do any better with that as opposed to the rabbit ears, or experiment with both? You might have a suggestion on that one, Eric. Go ahead.
If you get a chance, then two we out. You know, let me tell you what happened in 1999 when CBS put their transmitter up, and the DTV truck was coming around. That was one of the first and second generation equalizers. There was no way in heck that we could pick it up directly, because it was up with the demonstration area, was up by the Coliseum. What we did was we pointed the antenna at the Gulf and Western building, or the Trump building, whatever you want to call it, and got a perfect reflection from there that worked perfectly fine. I don't think that's necessary. You get a current area tuner, a pair of plain old rabbit ears, and I bet you can get everything.
Even the upper VHF channels, you're saying, upper VHF and UHF, all on the rabbit ears. Essentially channel 7 through 51 is what you're saying, Eric, on rabbit ears at the 30th floor of probably a steel-reinforced building. Over to you, Eric.
Yeah, I think with the latest generation of tuner, you should be able to do it. I mean, you know, how far away is he, you know? Yes, a well-shielded building is a well-shielded building, but the way they build apartment buildings is usually not that shielded. I've had good success with a number of buildings, one in Lincoln Plaza there, which is not far from where he is, and we got somebody else over on the east side by the bridge. There's no problem there. We're talking rabbit ears.
Yeah, well, let me just see if I have it.
You got it.
If nothing's changed, and then there was another station in there, I'll turn it over. I didn't get his call, WB2, I think. If nothing's changed since last year, or nothing will change, then I'm telling you, rabbit ears or a little Yagi or anything into this, I would say, year and a half old, digital capable LC40 8 inch or 50 inch, I forget what it was again, digital ready TV, I'm just trying to think of the name again, ViewSonic, which is also, as we all know, a computer LCD manufacturer. I'm in big trouble. I even did try bouncing off of one building that's two blocks away and the height of this building, and like I said, all I was able to get were those two religious channels.
All right, two things. One is, you don't realize that it's very old receiver technology at this point. The other thing is, when you try to pick stuff up, did you scan? Did you have your antenna in one spot and then scan?
Absolutely. I was a human ham-em. I tried everything to bring in these digital signals, and with no luck. Oh, and by the way, Dick, just want to ask you a quick question about this MFJ artificial ground. On the back, it has two connectors. One has a wing nut, and above it says two transmitter or antenna, tune a chassis ground, and another one that has a different type of connector that says two counterpoise wire or ground connection wire. Is one of the other, I know the counterpoise one I need, but do I need the other one too, going to the 440 wing nut? Anyway, there was a station at WB2, I think, to pick it up. Go ahead.
Yeah, for you to use that artificial ground, you have to have a real wire on each of those so-called ground connections, in my opinion, because that poor thing is trying to tune a piece of wire. M2EO wants to say a couple words, but before we get to him, I gotta go back to poor Mel. Mel, I know you've got a bunch of mail, emails backing up where people want questions. We had a bunch of hot topics tonight. We never got to any of those guys. Well, you're gonna have to apologize to them, and they're going to be making voodoo dolls. Sorry about that. K2, looks like we got a little bit more time here. K2KUY.
I don't know if I got it. This is K2KUY. I'll just say goodnight. Yeah, I'll try to handle some of this stuff if I can, and we'll see if we can. All right, we'll pick it up next week. I understand the situation. I saw what happened tonight. This is K2KUY 73.